The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
We have the outdoor report here in just a moment. We'll get that teed up here. But we have a quick call from Lynn over at Sky Park. Lynn, I was just talking about you a moment ago about the insurance, and you wanted to set the record straight on a listener call yesterday, because I guess people are calling you and they're concerned about the financial shape of some of the insurance companies, I guess is what I'm hearing right now.
Yeah. Okay. Somebody called in and said that AllCare and Atrio are in financial distress. Don't know about AllCare. They focus on Medicare patients, but they did have a plan for the private market that's going away. But Atrio is in perfectly fine shape. There's no truth to that. Don't know where he got that, but it scared a lot of people. It's a very popular plan in our area. And I just want to set the record straight. That's just simply not true.
Now, by the way, AllCare, being a CCO, I think the challenge that AllCare is facing, it's not an insurance company per se, right? That's not an insurance company. It's a coordinated care organization. But
I don't really understand them, to be quite honest.
You know, I remember when I was talking to the late Senator Bates, and he would tell me about it every week about how this would work, and I still don't understand it, right? You know, but I think what's going on there is that state support for the CCOs may be in a little bit of strain right now, just because all of the COVID money has been blown now on various programs.
Yeah, a lot of people are losing their Medicaid coverage, so that's creating some distress.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if that's affecting AllCare, but that's not an issue for Atrio.
No, it's not. Okay, duly noted. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, Lynn. It's 16 after 7. We switch now to Mr. Outdoors. He's sitting there. He's all game. He's got his football pads on, and he's ready to, well, he's not ready to hit the showers yet. How you do? Well, of course, plenty of showers. How you doing, Greg? Welcome. It's been wild this week.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's been a while since we've seen rain like this, and you're talking about hit the showers. I just suddenly flash back to the last time I was in Phoenix, Arizona in monsoon season, and the way water pours out of the sky down there in a monsoon thunderstorm, you literally could take a shower outside.
But... yeah, pretty much. Well, you know, my experience with probably the most intense rain of my life, Fargo, Moorhead in the summertime,
yeah. You
know, with those amazing thunderstorms in which the twister, the storm chaser type people, I have never seen lightning like that would go around you like a curtain, a circular curtain around you, and the awesome power. But I remember some of the rain that would come. Wow. Just never seen anything like it.
Because people, you know, when you start saying you live in the Northwest to people in other parts of the country, they go, oh, it's always so rainy there.
Not really.
Well, the reality is it's overcast a lot, and typically in the wintertime, and we get more steady, uniform, light rain.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to some other places the country I've been in to experience their rain, even Phoenix, Arizona in monsoon season, the rain we get here in terms of rate coming out of the sky is absolutely nothing. I mean, it's pretty rare where I see a really heavy rain here that I start going, okay, that's Oklahoma rain, that's Texas rain, that's Phoenix, Arizona monsoon rain. We just don't typically have that. And you get to the parts of the country where tropical systems come into play, I guarantee you there are people who relocated to other places, specifically Florida, some other places that got hit by especially Hurricane Helene. They got to see rain the likes of which they'd never seen in their life and certainly never saw here in Oregon.
Another place where I remember seeing amazing rain when it did happen was, oddly enough, in the desert in Barstow. In my first radio job, that you didn't get a lot of rain, but it was surprising that sometimes when it did come, it was massive and flash flood creating kind of rain everywhere you went. It was that kind of stuff going on.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're talking about with Phoenix, Arizona, and places like Las Vegas. Anywhere where the monsoon rains in July and August hit, the amount of water coming out of the sky is just incredible. And the same is true with tropical systems. The amount of water coming out of the sky is just incredible.
Now, is our bomb cyclone portion of the program this week over now, Greg? I mean, we've heard this talked about in the national news incessantly. Okay.
I think Bomb Cyclone is, but I'm going to be putting up a post here in just a few minutes showing the latest satellite view. And we have this low that developed off the coast last night. It's curving north. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why it's doing that is the remains of the Bomb Cyclone. Its center of circulation is diving down on the left-hand side of this new low, helping to spin it north. There's a term for this. It's called the Fujiwara effect, and you'll get two lows, two cyclones, and they start rotating around each other. And somebody described it, and I can't remember who it was, as two bowls in a ring. Mm-hmm. And I love that description because that's basically what they do. They move in this counterclockwise motion around each other, and occasionally they can merge and develop into something really major. We don't expect that to happen this time. What's going to keep happening is the low that is closest to the coast now is going to eject up into the Gulf of Alaska. The remnants of what was the Bomb Cyclone is going to pivot around that and then come right back in on us Sunday night into Monday.
Okay.
It will be far less fierce than it was when it hit us last Tuesday into Wednesday. But it's going to bring cold air in, it's going to bring rain and snow in, and it's going to bring lowering snow levels. Then what will happen is the low that's currently off the coast pivots up there, clear up, and reaches southern Alaska, and then it starts shooting cold air down towards us. A high is going to form. And when that high really develops, it's actually now going to create what looks to be pretty decent weather for Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's great for the travelers, right? That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great news.
But
good.
It is going to inject cold air into us, but there's not going to be a whole lot of moisture. And I was talking about this last night in the live at Rogue Weather. What it's going to do eventually, Thanksgiving morning, we're probably going to see snow levels somewhere around 2,000 feet. By the time it gets there. Just not going to be a lot of moisture. And Wednesday and Thanksgiving Day, so day before Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving Day itself, it looks like what we're going to be having is more showers over terrain, because the terrain enhancement is absolutely going to be a required element to get them going. So Medford, most of Grants Pass, probably going to remain dry both the day before Thanksgiving and on Thanksgiving Day, but you get over and around mountains, and yeah, there's probably going to be snow showers, because even in the middle of the day, Wednesday and Thanksgiving Day both, I don't see snow levels getting much above 3,000 feet. Now, here's the really good news for Mount Ashland and Mount Shasta Ski Park, who are not getting good news this morning. Snow levels have gone up so high it is raining at both. But
now, that makes kind of a crusty base, though. Isn't that good,
yeah,
ultimately?
Here's what's going to happen. It's actually settling in the snow that they did get.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that colder air returns, when that colder air returns, it's going to lock it up and make it as solid as can be. So this is actually excellent news. And, you know, based on the fact that we'll get into colder air, there will be more snow coming for both ski areas, definitely by late in the day on Sunday. And then they're looking at snow, steady state snow, from Sunday night through Tuesday night, early Wednesday morning. I think as I look at this, the overall situation for both is good. And I said it on one of my lives on Rogue Weather, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Mount Ashland, if they popped an opening in the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, because mm-hmm. they certainly got the snow. They got their cats out on the runs. They were packing it in. They were doing what they needed to do to prep it. They put their mountain operations people to work already. They're prepping the area. They're doing all kinds of detail work that must get done, things like getting the boundary ropes up for the ski area, getting the pads on the ski lift towers and the light stands, you know, little things like that. They're working hard.
Yeah, they're all getting ready for that, sure.
Open. And I think that's going to have a great payoff. I'm not sure what the status for Mount Shasta Ski Park is. I haven't heard them talking at all about bringing staff in and prepping the mountain. I have yet to see any real evidence of cats out working the slopes. You know, maybe they have. I just haven't seen it, and I can't see it in the webcams like you clearly could with Mount Ashland. So I think right now, based on what I know, Mount Ashland is the far more likely one to be opening up early. But the reality is, if they did open, say, next weekend, that would be about 2 weeks early from where they would typically open, because a typical opening for them would be second Saturday in December, which in this case we're talking the 14th.
Well, we're certainly looking at the La Nina pattern that has been setting up quite sufficiently here. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, though, are there still any hunting seasons open right now? Will this weather be helpful in this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The weather is definitely going to be helpful. And yes, there are still hunting seasons going on. The two most notable ones is the late season archery hunt for deer in the Rogue and Evans Creeks unit. This is one of the premium hunts of the year in the entire state of Oregon, because if you want to get a whopper blacktail buck, this is the best hunt to have, other than the Applegate unit muzzleloader deer tag. This would be the next best tag to have. And the rut is finally really beginning to kick in for blacktails. And it was late arriving this year, kind of blew my mind, but it's definitely kicking on now. So these guys holding late season archery deer tags, going to be real helpful. But the other big one, a personal interest to me, because at this time tomorrow, with any luck at all, we'll have our bull on the ground, Rogue unit muzzleloader for elk. And my rifle elk season, at least I got to see elk. I know a lot of people who didn't even see an elk in the Cascade rifle elk season, so at least I got to see some. And we were on the trail of one particular bull, big, giant bull. He happened to walk in front of the webcam of a buddy of mine, or, you know, hunting cam out there of a buddy of mine, and he's huge. He's a 6x7 because he posed right in front of the camera like a model.
Wow.
So we got a great look at this guy. And he made it through rifle season. I know that because if somebody would have got him, the internet and social media down here would have lit up.
Oh, yeah,
well,
certainly.
I think I figured out where he went. And my buddy George, who's probably listening to this right now as he's on his school bus route, well, he drew a muzzleloader elk tag for the Rogue unit, and that starts tomorrow, and it goes through Black Friday. And I have it in my head. I think I figured out where that bull went. And we're going to be there tomorrow morning and get on the chase and see if we can locate him. But regardless, the first legal bull that walks out into muzzleloader range, we're going to take him. But obviously, we know Big Boy is out there and have a pretty good idea of where he's at.
I saw a deer of note here. I was up at Phoenix Baldy yesterday, you know, the mountains east of Phoenix, you know, servicing a transmitter site. And I was at probably 2,500 foot elevation level here. 10-point buck. 10-point.
Yeah. That surprised me.
Yeah.
Because rut's coming on, as I said. It's finally really getting going. And the bucks are starting to prowl. And they definitely, you know, the big boys that have remained hidden to this point are coming out and being real visible. And that's why that Rogue late season archery tag is such a great one. Now, where you were at,
yeah,
that's 100% private property.
I know. I know.
And I actually know somebody who knows the owner of that property, that he's going to be up there for an archery elk hunt because there are ag tags that get issued for Mount Baldy, and later on in the winter, there gets to be a sizable herd of elk up there, and I suspect this is that same herd of elk that basically gets seen everywhere from east side of Medford over to the Valley View Road area to the north of Ashland, and they just keep wandering around through there. But in the winter on Baldy, they definitely will spend more time on there because Baldy has those west-facing slopes towards Medford that tend to hold less snow and have more sun on them. And I've sat down there on Carpenter Hill Road and just through binoculars looked at all the elk up there. And I think my best count at any one time was 60 that I could see through binoculars.
Well, I know the deer that I saw, and he wasn't visible for very long. I want to say about 3/4 of a second, just enough for me to count how much was there. Yeah. And boom, gone. And, you know, he saw me and just took off like a flash. It was amazing how fast he was.
We have giant bucks that literally are right here in the towns in the area that because the rut has come on, I think people will see bucks that will just blow their minds now because they are coming out in the daytime and they'll be right in people's yards. No question about it.
All right. Very good. So there is activity this weekend to keep in mind. Hey, want to do an outdoor report on Wednesday morning? Cause I'm going to be off on Thursday, Friday for the holiday, like everybody else.
You know, we've been pretty consistent about that. And, I'm going to go ahead and say yes right now. I'll let you know if we need to change that to Tuesday next week because we may still be in pursuit of an elk. And Tuesday is...
Hey, you got to have priorities here, right, you know? Mr. Outdoors has to go in the outdoors occasionally, too, over at Rogue Weather.
Yeah, okay? Exactly. Yeah. And especially with the motivation of knowing what kind of bull elk is in this drainage that we're going to be hunting. I know where he went when all of the snow was kicking in. It's just a matter of trying to get eyeballs on him and work him out in the open, which we're definitely going to try and do. But, you know, I know the drainage he's in, and we're going to be doing a bottom-up hunt. We're going to start with the lowest elevation, work our way up to the top. And the reason for that, I'm seeing so many pictures now from people of the elk herd that we were just talking about that gets on Baldy. Well, they've been on the east side of Medford, and I got multiple pictures of them in a spot I'd never seen them before, a stone's throw from your house, right up there, you know, where Delta Waters dead ends on Foothill.
Yeah.
And then you have those big fields that the Mormon Church owns.
Yep.
They were out there in that field right up against the brush line.
Man, that's like 2 blocks from me. That's 2 blocks from where I live. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
You had a herd shoot of elk. Huge herd of elk.
Yeah, right? no shooting though. There though, I think it's a city limits thing, even in those fields. So they know.
And
okay.
So, but that gives me an indication on how low elk are. Plus, I'm getting people sending pictures off of Highway 140, Brownsboro area elk along Highway 140. My uncle is telling me we definitely have elk on our ranch, or his ranch rather, but I say ours, it's family, you know, which is basically along Little Butte Creek, from Little Butte Creek all the way back over to Highway 140, and then we have a section to the south of 140, and the elk have been milling around in there, so they're already down low, and I think all that snow up high definitely kicked them out of the higher elevation. So if you are also another muzzle loader tag holder for Rogue Unit, think low, not high, because getting a lot of evidence to suggest they're
They're on the move down rather than up. All right. Hey, Greg, let's grab a couple calls here before you take off. I think they're here for you. Hi, good morning. You want to talk with Greg? Welcome. Who's this?
Yeah, I just had a question for Greg that it's always run around in my brain.
What's that?
Why was there ever, I mean, I understand a long time ago why there was the pursuit of the ultimate buck or the creme de la creme, but it seems like nowadays maybe we'd have a different strategy as far as which animal we take. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah,
right? You're obviously taking the top genetic stock. When you take
obviously everybody's interested in getting, the trophy.
Yeah.
But when it comes right down to it, especially with elk, and, you know, I stress this with George, I actually stress it with every hunter, especially with elk, any legal bull is a great bull because it's hard enough just to get on them and get them. You know, in my lifetime, I've been lucky enough to be able to be right place, right time to get six bulls. Four of those were spikes, including the first one I ever got. I am as thrilled with any of my spikes as I am with my 4x5 branch bull. I've never, ever in my life gotten a truly what most people would consider wall hanger bull. But like I said, I'm thrilled when I get a spike. When it comes to deer hunting, yeah, there was a point in time in my life when I was able to literally hunt every single available day that I was pretty choosy and I was looking for, you know, specific bucks. But now, oh man, honestly, if a spike crosses through my sights and we're definitely towards the end of the season, I'll take a spike and be real happy about it. I think there's kind of a growing shift in general, though. I think people are becoming a little less
trophy-based, you think?
Focused.
Yeah.
Because when it comes right down to it, at the end of the day, you can't eat antlers, and sometimes antlers can turn into other issues, and, you know, people don't always think about all the ramifications. Let's put it this way. Let's say we got lucky and Big Boy made a mistake and he got within 50 yards of us, which is really effective muzzleloader range, and George was able to get him on the ground. Based on what we know from the game cam pick of him, George doesn't have the wall space to put that thing up in his house. I don't have it. That would definitely have to be shown in a place like Blackbird or Sportsman's Warehouse, and that's another issue a lot of people run into.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, when it comes right down to it too, the younger bulls, for sure, better eating quality, always have been. My grandfather was a legacy hunter in the state of Oregon, and when he would get an elk tag, it would allow him to shoot basically any elk. What he would shoot? Calves.
Yeah, I get that for the food quality of that, if you're going to do that. All right, Greg, have a great weekend, and good luck on your hunt, and maybe we'll talk Tuesday, Wednesday, one way or the other. All right, you be well over at Rogue Weather.
That out, but we will definitely be either Tuesday or Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. 99.3 KBXG, 106.3 KMED. Outdoor Report, sponsored in part by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford.
Oregon Truck and Auto Authority is celebrating its 20-year anniversary as the Rogue Valley's car, truck, Jeep, and SUV accessory upfit headquarters. Specializing in spray-on bedliners, vehicle undercoating, tonneau covers, and the largest selection of fiberglass, commercial, and metal canopies in the area. Running boards, Nerf bars, bumpers, winches, and LED lighting are also on the menu, along with hitches, decked drawer systems, and bed slides too. Come see Oregon Truck and Auto Authority today and get your vehicle ready for your next adventure.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Wrencher Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Wrencher Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
Bah humbug.
Let me guess, you ordered way too much inventory for Christmas this time.
I couldn't pass it up. Some of the deals were so great, and we got it for less than what gold value is.
So what are we going to do with all this stuff?
We're going to have a Black Friday sale.
Of course we are.
You do this every year.
It's great deals for the people.
So what did you find that's so great?
Rings, diamonds, colored stones, even some estate jewelry.
Come check out our new lines, custom bands, pendants, earrings. diamonds, even bracelets and genuine lab diamonds and mine diamonds for everybody.
Yep, and I'll tell you, I never believed I like real diamonds, but the lab diamonds have really got me going.
And remember, you can always find that special diamond for that special someone.
And don't forget, $5 will hold anything until Christmas.
Plus, we have easy financing options and layaway options.
Father and son, we're on East Jackson between Riverside and Central.
When addiction takes hold, it's easy to feel like no one can help, but you're not in this alone.
For 75 years, Hazelden Betty Ford has been at the forefront of addiction and mental health care, evolving treatment, reimagining recovery, and breaking through barriers to help families everywhere find healing.
So please, reach out at 844-254-7366. Help us here.
Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation and aired by this station.
You're hearing The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
I appreciate you being here. 7:39. We'll break for news here in just a moment. And then we have some open phone time. And yeah, we could talk about Gates. We could talk about local politics. We could talk about the showering. And I have some answering, you know, coaches showering with the guys. Some people writing me about that and setting me straight because the only sport that I ever really played, I was in track for one season. And that was shot put. Because I can't run. I still couldn't run. I couldn't run even back then. And I just don't remember the coach showering with us. But I guess apparently that's a thing, I guess. I don't know. Another question I wanted to just toss by you. This is just a fun one. Do you go to estate sales? And if so, is it just about the finding the good stuff, or is there something else to it? I love estate sales, although they sadden me in another way. I mean, I go out there and I'm finding, you know, great deals. And I was at an estate sale last weekend in town, and I bought a computer bag. There was a computer bag just for, I think it was like the half price day. You know, it's one of those things where at the end it's just like, gosh, you know, you throw an offer at them and they'll be willing to let you get it. So I got it for like $5. Got this computer bag for like $5. And I'm going to put some of my radio station stuff when I go in the service places. I'm going to put, you know, material in it that I need, like a little toolkit, that kind of thing. And so I was going through it, and I ended up getting this this note from the Geek Squad. The Geek Squad, you know, the people that service computers over at Best Buy. That sort of thing. And I'm not going to put the person's name because, obviously, I was at an estate sale. The gentleman is no longer around. But sometimes I get a little saddened when I'm going through an estate sale and you look at, especially you're going through someone's closet, right? And you're seeing some elderly woman's wardrobe. Here's the little shoes and the little hats and all the other thing. Or you'll see the man's suits, you know, that sort of thing. It's kind of like, wow. What would get me is that when you go through estate sales and then they have piles of frames and the frames are filled with family and work photos and nothing is being done with it. They're just going out with the frames and you're thinking, wow, you know, these are family moments of history that are just, you know, going out for 50 cents. And that kind of bugs me a little bit, but yet I understand it's just the way it is. Someone's going into memory care or whatever it is, and so they just want to sell it out to the walls so that they're able to take care, or else it's just in the estate because the person had passed away. But still, I'm always kind of it's poignant. There's a lot of poignancy of estate sales. But this one made my eyes open. It was someone... the person at the estate sale took his computer to the Geek Squad and says, okay, here's the client description of issue. A message saying that inappropriate material was on his computer planted by the FBI. Cannot access computer. So the guy says, the FBI is planting inappropriate material. Wow. Now, what date did this happen? Let's see. Oh, it was back in 2013. This was prior to Trump, so it wasn't like a QAnon sort of thing with the FBI putting stuff on that one. Listen, the FBI is in control of my computer. So that one made me chuckle a little bit. Something tells me it was probably just a virus or a Trojan hack of some sort, but still I thought that was interesting. So we can talk about that. What is kind of the most interesting or unique find you ever got out of an estate sale, something with a story. I'd love to hear your story, because there's always an estate sale. I love them, but there's a poignancy to it also. 743 at KMED, you're on the Bill Myers Show.
The new line of Horizon trailers have arrived at Two Dogs Fabricating, and they're celebrating by giving away a turkey fryer with any trailer purchased before Thanksgiving. Horizon heavy-duty equipment trailers are available in 10, 12, 14, and 20-foot lengths, and available in all black or two-tone black gray and black tan. So come sniff around our selection of Iron Bull, North Star, and Horizon trailers, and take one home loaded with a turkey fryer through Thanksgiving. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way off Sage Road.
News brought to you by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A local teacher has been arrested on sex abuse charges. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office says Amanda Leonardo worked for the Eagle Point School District. Although the charges are unrelated to her work at school, she's accused also of tampering with evidence and providing liquor to a person under 21. The victim have been identified as being high school age. Oregon's Environmental Quality Commission adopted a climate protection program Thursday, setting enforceable caps on greenhouse gas emissions from fossil fuels. The limits decline over time in an attempt to reduce emissions in Oregon by 50% in 10 years and 90% by 2050. It's expected to increase the cost for consumer utilities, fuel, and products. Providence Medford nurses are taking a strike vote in the near future after the latest bargaining session with hospital administration failed. The top issue for nurses is full retroactive pay or a bonus of $12,000. I'm Bill London, KMED.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all of the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MilletteConstruction.com.
Joel here for Butler Ford and Truck Center, and I've got two Joel specials and a 179 tax deduction update for you business owners. My first Joel special is a $344 a month payment on a new Ford F-150. Lease a new Ford F-150 for only $344 a month. My second Joel special is, well, for you Jeep drivers. Trade in that Jeep for a Ford Bronco Sport and you'll pay only $280 a month. Not a Jeep owner? Your payment only goes up a little bit more than the $280 a month. Now, if you're a business owner looking to take advantage of that 179 tax deduction for your and purchases, Butler Ford is your 179 headquarters. I've got 54 Super Duty trucks in stock that all qualify for the 179 deduction. Whether you want to lease or buy, come see me. I'll show you how it's done. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes down the freeway in Ashland, right off of exit 19, where you know you've got your truck, your SUV, your certified pre-owned, and your 179 savings.
36-month leases from $6,250 to a signing on stock number 598.35 with selling price of $54,210 and $3,500 to a signing on stock number 598.50 with selling price of $31,777. After all rebates and discounts on approved credit to Ford Motor Financing, excludes tax, license, title, 250 dealer, dot VC dealer. Details.
Hi, I'm Lisa with Kelly's Automotive Service, and I'm on KMED.
746-770-5633, some open phone time. A couple of questions in play that I'd like to bring up this morning, but you can set the agenda any way you wish at 770-5633, 770-KMED. And this is like a non-political one, but have you ever gone to, what is the most interesting item you've ever picked up at, let's say, an estate sale with a story behind it? You just picked it up thinking it was, you were just getting something, and then you end up finding a story behind it. Like with me, my $5 computer bag that I'm going to be using, and you end up finding out that the guy took the computer that used to be in the bag over to the computer store because the FBI was in control of his computer and had put inappropriate material on it. Now, that could be. It really could be. I've often wondered about the ability of the deep state to be able to put child porn on people's computers. But apparently this gentleman is no longer around, thought that. So that kind of made me chuckle a little bit. Another one here. The story coming out of Willamette Week that it's looking like Medford is just a step or two away from getting the tribal casino in Medford, in South Medford. And I thought it was interesting that listener David called up, and he was saying that he thinks that engaging in the casino activity actually demeans the tribes. Do you believe that? Do you think That's right on. I thought it was an interesting perspective. I hadn't really thought about that. My observation of most of the tribes is that it is a big part of their economic security and seems to do pretty well for the tribal members. You see them all working in the, you know, many tribal members are working within the casino industrial complex, if you want to call it that. Now, we have the state senators. We have U.S. senators, rather, Wyden and Merkley, and, of course, Governor Kotek. They're not happy about this. They kind of like the, you know, what they call the balanced, you know, the balanced version in which everybody has a casino over on their land, but not everybody has land that is a good spot for a casino where the people are. So now we're probably going to possibly see an arms race here, you know, a casino race. Is that a good thing? I tend to look at the casino industry, though, unfortunately, especially when I see it paired up with all this conversation of all the amazing apartment complexes we're going to be building in Medford over the next few years as part of the you will own nothing and be happy kind of economy. We'll, you know, you're not going to own a home. We don't want you owning a home. Owning a home is racist. You don't like that. It's not climate friendly, equitable community, you know, all that kind of stuff. But you can have your, you know, your little apartment complex and then go and gamble at the casino. Now, I know that's, you may agree or disagree with that, but I know that, hey, when I go out to Lucky 7 on the coast, you go out to the coast and Linda and I stay there. It's a nice place, right? And I don't see a lot of young people gambling. It's mostly people coming in and gambling away Social Security checks. So maybe there's a case, maybe what David was talking about, maybe there's something to it. But it's their money, and they're having fun. I guess you're having fun, right? You having fun? For me, it's a couple of slot machines, and that's about it. You know, they look at Linda and me coming in, they go, oh, we're not going to make much money on gambling with these two clowns. Oh, boy. Oh, well, they stay in the room. They pay. They tip nice. They eat. That kind of thing. 770-563-3770-KMED. Anything on your mind this morning, we can do that. Let me go to line one. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. It's Francine.
Francine, welcome to the show. Good to have a regular on Friday. What's up?
Well, in regard to the casino and the Indian tribes and all that, the demeaning aspect of it, you know, I kind of get that. I would say it's more hypocritical because here we have all these tribes that, you know, are whining about their heritage and the fish and the dams. They want our dams out so they can have their fish back. And they want all this traditional stuff that they're going on and on and on about. And here they are. Oh, let's have a casino. That is not American Indian heritage. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I kind of look at it as Native American heritage of just getting even a little bit, you know, kind of it's kind of a unofficial reparations. Wouldn't you call it that, really?
Well, yeah. And that's part of my point. It's like we didn't do anything to them. We didn't put them on reservations. Other people did. A couple hundred years ago, this all happened. We didn't do it, you know, so we don't owe them. You know,
well, but nobody requires you to go play at the casino, though.
No, I'm not talking about having to go to the casino. I'm just talking about giving them the casino because, oh, they're the Indians and they deserve this. It's like, and the casino is, I mean, I worked in Reno for a while. I got stranded in Reno and I ended up working there. I didn't get stranded because I was gambling, by the way. It was a whole other story. Anyways, I mean, I saw, you know, families sitting on the side of the road with their kids with signs up. Gas money to get home, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I can concur with you. That's not a personal experience, but Linda, you know, my wife Linda used to work at McCarran Airport as a teenager, young woman out of high school, and she worked at the informational booth, you know, when people would come there and go in there, and she talked about all the sad stories of people there that had even sold their airline ticket. Back then, you could get away with doing that.
Yeah, I remember those.
Yeah, to gamble it, and they're sitting in the airport, and they had nowhere to go, and they were trying to find that that happened. But not everybody's like that. That's
no, I know, but it's I don't think it's. I mean, casinos have there's nice parts about casinos, and there's tragic parts about casinos, and you know they have the entertainments and things like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know about having a casino right in the. Is it still going to go where the bowling alley is?
Yeah, I guess that's what we're talking about. Yeah, Southeast Medford.
What? I think bowling is so much more wholesome. If I weren't so, you know, wrecked up and stuff, I'd be bowling.
Yeah, ain't no money in it. That's why there's more money in the casino, my friend. Thanks for the call, though, Francine. 770-5633. Bowling instead of the casino. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
That's Chris from Central Point.
Hey, Chris, what are you thinking?
Pardon my ignorance on the area because I've only been here a couple of years, but is there tribal land that they're looking to put this on?
Well, no, these are not tribal lands, but they are. It's going to be something kind of like a government-created tribal land in Medford that will be. It'll be kind of like right. And like I said, I almost have no problem with this because in many ways I look at the American Native Americans today as freer of government interference than many of we regular folks that are just put in the regular city. So I would just say, hey, I'm okay with the Coquille having some so-called tribal land here. I just want to be able to join the tribe. I think we should all be able to apply and join the tribe. That's all. And get the same rights, okay?
Fair enough. I come from the land of Navajo Nation area, mm-hmm. and so I've watched what they have a couple of casinos out there, and one of them's the Twin Arrows. And what I was able to experience for about 15 years was the fact that those casinos actually only benefit so much of the tribe, and usually that's the upper echelon of them. And there is numerous areas that are surrounded in those. Within the tribal areas, and that's why I was wondering, because I didn't know. It was my understanding, dealing with federal and state officials over there in that area, that casinos were only allowed to be built on tribal land, so I didn't know how they were going to acquire that. I know the Navajo Housing Authority out there acquired land by purchasing, which they're...
And I think that's what we're talking about here. The tribe purchases it, and so I guess they're going to deem it tribal land. And needless to say, there's a certain amount of sovereignty that comes with that. And then the city of Medford, of course, loses tax revenue.
Right.
Everybody gets excited, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. and the smokers might be happy about that because they'll definitely open up a smoke shop and that'll be duty free.
Well, one of the things that I have loved about going into casinos here, and I know this sounds so weird, but I'll walk into a casino and you smell cigarette smoke and makes me smile. It makes me smile because I'm thinking, oh my gosh, adults can actually behave a bit like adults. It's okay.
Oh, and
right?
I definitely agree with you there. And if they put in an actual real roulette table that's not a computer, I'll be there, that's for sure.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate the call and the opinion. Thanks for it. 770-5633. Line 3 is up. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Hey, Bill, it's Matt.
Matt, how you doing, buddy?
I'm great, man. Hey, so the most important rules for business and being successful are get the bread, Fred, and get the dojo.
Right.
I say let the natives open up their casinos anywhere they want and make it rain with all that dancing.
Huh. Now, are you being sarcastic or serious? I just want to make sure.
I'm serious.
You're serious.
I'm serious. If they want to open a casino, they can get out there. I know people say it's non-competitive because not just anybody can open a casino.
Mm-hmm.
But I say let them open the casino. If it brings in more revenue, I don't know about the disparity in profits as far as where those end up. Usually they do end up at the top. That's what happens. But I'm an advocate. If they can have a business model that can work and people can make money, if people have jobs, and it's something that I don't gamble. I play craps because
I don't either. I'm not really a gambler. I play a little bit of slots. I've just never been a games of chance thing. But I will buy lotto tickets. You know, that's the extent of my gambling, I guess. You know.
Actually, if you understand the game of craps, craps is actually a pretty good game. And I've actually over the years, I haven't gambled in some time, but over the years, I've done really well with it. I've used it in Vegas. I've used it in Reno. I've used it in Atlantic City.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to understand the game a little bit and stay away from the sophisticated bets. But yeah, I say if they can open a casino and it creates jobs and people can make money, if the economy supports it, I say, yeah, let's do it.
All right. Thanks for the call. 770-5633. Another one. Hi. Good morning. Hello.
Hey. Good morning, Bill. It's Deplorable Patrick.
DP, what's up?
Under the under the heading of whatever you want to talk about, I am becoming more and more disrespectful of these homeless people. Not because they're homeless, but because of why they're homeless. They simply can't keep any rules, and they trash up the area. The rule that I want to talk about right now is the thing about crossing and the crosswalks. So they make it more and more and more. It's their little trademark to cross in the middle of the block, even when traffic is kind of heavy.
Yeah.
And they will not walk 50 feet to the crosswalk. They'll cross in the outside of the crosswalk, 50 feet from the crosswalk, just to show you they can. And I have a question for you.
Well, one thing I just mentioned to you is that last time I checked, Oregon does not have a jaywalking law. All right. So there is no requirement to use the crosswalk. And there is evidence that people who use the crosswalk are more likely to be run down than people who jaywalk, because when you jaywalk, you're paying attention. In the crosswalk, you're just assuming that the traffic light will protect you. But I digress. Please continue.
Years ago, I was over by the old post office in Medford, and I was I noticed that there were two police officers crossing in the middle of the block. And mm-hmm. I said, "Hey, I'll cross with you guys. I know if I can't get in too much trouble if I'm crossing with two MPD officers." And Dan Reed said, "It's not illegal to cross in the middle of the block. What's illegal is to walk out in front of traffic or to interfere with traffic."
Exactly. That's the difference.
Yeah. And so, one of our mutual friends the other day said something about the pedestrian laws, and I didn't take it up with him. He just kind of in a passing thing. And then, the next day, I was down there near the Sherry's on the south side of town. Some idiot was crossing the street, and I'm coming up, and it's like he wasn't even looking.
No.
And I was coming on, and he could hear my diesel coming, and I wasn't letting off the gas. And he looked up kind of shocked mm-hmm. that I didn't just stop for him in the middle of the block. What I'm asking you
Well, see, that was an Ashland bum, okay? That was an Ashland bum that got trained on SOU. More?
This guy did.
I swear, if you want to see more of the stupidity of pedestrians, you know, just go into Ashland. Ashland, they coddle the pedestrian that way. So
I don't coddle them, but this guy didn't look like a bum at all. He mm-hmm. looked kind of normal, but he got across two lanes, and he was shocked when he had to stop while I kept on the gas. And what I'm asking you is, has there been a change? The world gets stupider by the day. Has there been a change to favor these idiots that they can cross in the middle of the block and we have to break for them? Is there any kind of a new thing like that?
Yeah, I don't know if there. I don't think there's been a change to the walking across the street laws. Things are the same. All I would just say is that if you're going to get rough on that, you do have a dash cam on that truck, right?
I don't, but I'm sure looking at it. I'm talking about my personal.
I think it's a good investment these days, okay? Appreciate the call there, DP. Watch it, okay?